You're listening to Showtime
on URN.
Hello, I'm Ella Vidrinska from Showtime, URN's specialist musical theatre show. And you're listening to our podcast Spotlight On, where I'm keeping you up to date each week with all the latest theatrical news. And this week we're looking at the film version of Dear Evan Hansen. It came out last Friday, the 22nd of October, and it's there to watch in cinemas right now. I've been to see it, and I'm going to take you through everything you need to know and everything that there is to be said about it so that you can decide whether it's something that you want to see too. Because look, let's rip the band-aid off straight away. It is not getting good reviews. It's averaging about 2 stars from most reviewers, which, to be fair, is still one better than Diana the Musical. But having seen it, I do completely understand why it's getting those bad reviews. I can also say that I enjoyed it way more than I was expecting to, so perhaps this is quite a good way of going about it, and hopefully that should mean things are relatively balanced and give you a nice overview. We will see what happens.
Step out of the sun if you keep getting burned. Step out of the sun because you've learned, because you've learned. On the outside, always looking in, will I ever be more than I've always been? Cause I'm topping on the glass. I'm waving through a window. I try to speak, but nobody can hear. So I wait around for an answer to appear while I'm watching people pass. I'm waving through a window.
So firstly, in case you've never heard of Dear Evan Hansen or are just a bit confused as to what exactly happens in it, let me give you a quick run through. So it was originally a stage musical that opened on Broadway in 2016 with an actor called Ben Platt playing the title role of Evan, a role that he is now reprising in the film version. It has music and lyrics by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, the duo behind the music for The Greatest Showman and La La Land, and it was pretty much an instant overnight success, with people across the world falling in love with a kind of contemporary acoustic pop vibe of the music. It quickly picked up a lot of awards, including the Tony Award for Best Musical, Best Score and Best Actor for Ben Platt as Evan, and it also transferred to the West End, where it's still playing now. So for all intents and purposes, this is what we call a quantifiably successful musical. Remember that. In terms of the plot then, it follows the titular Evan Hansen, who is an extremely socially anxious high school student who has been encouraged by his therapist to write a letter to himself every day explaining why that day is going to be good. These letters start with the phrase, "Dear Evan Hansen," hence the title of the show. However, one of these letters is found by another school student called Connor Murphy, who takes the letter, runs away, and then sadly later commits suicide. We find out later that when his family discovered Connor's body, they also found this letter starting "Dear Evan Hansen," and so assumed that it was Connor's suicide note to Evan. The Murphys also assume that this means Connor and Evan were best friends, and although Evan does try to deny it and explain the situation, Connor's grieving parents basically are so desperate to cling to the idea that Connor wasn't completely alone and that they didn't fail their son in his time of need. They then keep insisting, and Evan, in all of his anxiety-riddled confusion, sort of accidentally goes along with it and quickly gets swept up in a web of lies that spiral out of control. So that's sort of the first 10 minutes of the film and the setup for everything that then happens. It's the same in the stage show as it is here, and honestly, I do understand why people are falling at that very first hurdle, particularly if you've only seen the trailer or read the Wikipedia plot and don't actually know much about the musical. Evan's actions do come across as really manipulative, and it's the role of the film or the stage show or the actor playing Evan to convince you that this sort of central misunderstanding makes sense rather than being an act of cruel manipulation. And I will say, I think the film handles it relatively well. Like the stage show, it comes about from Evan never quite being assertive enough to explain to the Murphys that they've made a mistake, especially in the early stages of it, and They then take his lack of denial as agreement, again, because they themselves are so desperate to see some positive aspect in Connor's life. It's shown how Evan gets caught up in this by accident at the start, and that as it goes on, when he then starts to lie more explicitly, for instance in the song For Forever, where he basically creates an entirely fictitious day trip with Connor, he does it because he genuinely thinks he's making things better for the Murphys, and he still keeps things relatively vague and lets them fill in the blanks.
We walk a while and talk about the things we'll do when we get out of school. Like the Appalachian Trail, or write a book, or learn to sail. Wouldn't that be cool? There's nothing that we can't discuss, like girls we wish would notice us, but never do. He looks around and says to me, there's nowhere else I'd rather be, and I say, me too. And we talk and take in the view. We just talk and take in the view.
Now, the crucial thing here is that Evan is lying to these people. We know that, he knows that, so the question the film has to ask is whether we're meant to be sympathetic to Evan in this moment, whether we're meant to understand that his anxiety hasn't helped the situation and that he did genuinely think he was helping, or are we going to just see this as a terrible act of manipulation upon a grieving family that basically results in Evan getting everything he ever wanted. You know, he becomes popular, people like him. He gets a girlfriend in Connor's younger sister. He also gets a family in a way that he hasn't ever experienced with his single working mum life back at home. Evan gets everything he's wanted because of the lies he tells, and that's a really, really awful thing. So which side of the fence do we, the audience, fall on? I think I'm going to say that I'm probably in the former camp. I don't know whether it's because I know the story and I know Ben Platt as Evan, and so I'm maybe more lenient in going along with it. But as I said, I do think the film handles it well in terms of showing how Evan gets swept up in all of this and then obviously maybe becomes more cunning as the story progresses. But in that initial moment anyway, I do think I look at things more sympathetically. But a lot of people aren't doing that. And the problem there, and the elephant in the room that you probably knew was coming, is that Ben Platt himself does not look like a socially anxious teenager. The fundamental flaw of this film, and the thing that is being mentioned time and time again in reviews and on social media, is that Ben Platt is too old to play the role of Evan, and he is. When the show first came out on Broadway, Ben Platt was 23, playing a 17-year-old. When the film then started shooting, admittedly, I think he was only like 26, maybe 27, and while that doesn't feel like a massive jump conceptually, it translates on screen as someone looking really out of place, especially when everyone else playing like one of Evan's high school peers are in like their early 20s, so Ben looks a lot older than them as well. Now, I don't want to comment too much on Ben Platt's age, if I'm being perfectly honest. Yes, he's too old, and yes, he definitely is made to look older than he actually is, given the way they've styled him. I don't know why they've decided to go with that dark curly hair rather than the sort of preppy, fresh face look of the stage show. It really does age him, and I think it was an error in judgment to do that. One of the ways, though, that you can win the audience over to Evan's side in that initial moment when he starts misleading the Murphys is to have him look young and innocent and naive. We need to buy into the fact that he doesn't know better and is out of his depth and genuinely does mean well throughout all the confusion. If you cast someone who looks like a nearly 30-year-old man, as they have done for the film, you lose all of that, and it can frankly just be read as a bit creepy and manipulative instead, which then means you have to do more work in solidifying Evan's decisions through like dialogue and song and performance, because you don't automatically have the audience on your side, which is, to be fair, one of the main issues here. However, on the flip side, if the film is going to be successful overall, then Ben Platt's age shouldn't be the main factor in it. As the director, Stephen Chbosky, has said, if people see the movie and they're still talking about his age, then it probably wasn't for them anyway. And I understand what he means here. If you go and see Dear Evan Hansen and your main takeaway is that Ben Platt still looks too old, then the film as a whole has failed to win you over, and likely it wouldn't have been something you enjoyed even if Ben Platt wasn't there and there was a different person playing Evan. Because the age thing does kind of become more normal as the film goes on. The best way I can explain it is it's sort of like Ewan McGregor's French accent in Beauty and the Beast. Like when it starts and you're like, okay, no French person has ever sounded like this in the history of French-speaking people. If anything, it sounds Mexican. But then, like, because you're exposed to it for so long, you end up convincing yourself that, yes, that is what a French accent sounds like. And it's only then at the end of the film where you realise that you've been taken in by this, like, Stockholm syndrome effect. That's kind of what happens with Ben Platt. Yes, he is too old, but you do sort of get used to it. In fact, and I don't say this to be mean, it took me less time to get over the fact that Ben Platt doesn't look like a high school student than it did for me to get over the fact that the very pale makeup they've put him in and the way it really enhances his eyes, it makes him look like a possessed goblin. It literally wasn't his age that was my problem about the way he looked. It was that he looks like a goblin, he does. Again, no shade meant at all. I don't say that to be mean. It's just like, come on lads, pick your battles. The age thing is not the issue here. The point is, and the reason I do think it's important to address this, even though I think we should be able to move past it, is that yes, we know Ben Platt is too old to play Evan, but it's literally his job as an actor, as a performer, to make us forget that and to win us over as quickly as possible so that we can then immerse ourselves into the film. As Stephen Chbosky said, if you watch this and still your biggest takeaway is that Ben Platt was too old, then there is a much bigger issue with the film overall. And there will be people who can't get over that. And that is fine. But I do think if you're one of those people, then this film probably wouldn't be for you, no matter who was playing the title role. There are a lot of other issues at hand here that all feed in together. That being said, I do think Ben Platt was miscast. I think he's too old. I think he looks like a goblin, though. That is not his fault. That's the makeup. I think he's also too much of a theatre actor for this particular role. The YouTuber Amy Lovett, whose review of the film I will link in the post here, she said that it didn't feel like watching Ben Platt play Evan Hansen. It felt like watching Ben Platt, the Tony Award-winning actor, play Evan Hansen on stage, but on film. And I think she's hit the nail on the head there. When you're on stage, you need to perform in such a way that people on the front row of the stalls and the back row of the balcony get pretty much the same experience of the show. And so you end up doing a lot of big acting, like over-accentuating things and emphasising even the small moments of your performance so that people 50 plus metres away can still see. You do not have to do that on film. There is a camera literally 3 feet away from you. You can be much more subtle, much more reserved. And not just you can be, you should be. Because otherwise it comes off as being cartoonish and over the top and caricature-ish, which I will say is one of the big issues that's been raised by people who actually do suffer from anxiety and other conditions about this film. You can really tell that Ben Platt has carried a lot of this performance style over from the stage, and it just feels a bit out of place, especially when you then put him up against, like, normal screen actors like Caitlin Dever, who plays Zoe, Connor's younger sister, and even Amy Adams as Connor's mum, Cynthia, who has this real glassy, smile-at-all-costs American middle-class mum vibe. By comparison, Ben Platt does feel a bit over-the-top in places. At other times, it does work. By the point you get to something like Words Fail, Evan's big kind of apology song, it really plays to the advantage of the film that you've got someone like theatre star Ben Platt playing the role because he knows how to draw the emotion out of it. It feels real, it feels raw, and yet his voice still carries and performs well in a way that if you compare it to something like a lot of the crying while singing scenes in, like, the Les Mis film, for instance, you lose a lot of that and it hampers the singing side of the performance. I will say, for me, Words Fail was an absolute highlight of the film. I was in bits. I think it was one of the best numbers in the film, and it was one of the few times that I wasn't thinking about anything else. At pretty much every other point in the film, my brain was running away with like, oh, they could have done it this way, or oh, that's changed from the stage show, or why have they done it like that? But Words Fail was just... you couldn't think about anything else. It was very well done. It was the moment, I think, that it felt like you were just watching Evan rather than watching Ben Platt as Evan. And it's frustrating that it took until the very end of the film to get there, but I'm also pleased that there was a moment where it finally did get there.
Though I'd rather pretend I'm something better than these broken parts. Pretend I'm something other than this mess that I am. Cause then I don't have to look at it, and no one gets to look at it. No, no one can really see. Cause I've learned to slam on the brake before I even turn the key. Before I make the mistake, before I lead with the word.
And the music overall, it's fine. Personally, I found the music a little bit thin and flat compared to the Broadway cast recording. It had lost some of the dynamism for me, both in terms of the vocals, but also in the orchestrations and arrangements of the music itself. I will say that it does suit the film, but I wouldn't say that any of the songs in the film are the best versions I've ever heard of them. And certainly, if you want to listen to the music of Dear Evan Hansen, then I would still recommend the Broadway cast recording instead. I think you can also hear a lot of influence from The Greatest Showman in terms of the musical style of the film, in a way that you obviously don't get with the stage show because it was written earlier. But there's suddenly a much more synthetic electric drum machine vibe to the music of the film, which is 100% a carryover from The Greatest Showman, also written by Pasek and Paul, of course. Most of the songs from the stage show are in the film, with the exception of Disappear, Breaking a Glove, Good for You, and Anybody Have a Map. Now, while I really missed the song Anybody Have a Map, because it is an absolute bop, I'm not mad about the fact they opened with Waving Through a Window instead. Like, that's the more famous song from Dear Evan Hansen. That's a more commercial sounding one. I think they did a decent job of taking the dialogue from Anybody Have a Map and putting it into Waving Through a Window. Although that did then mean they had to take the dialogue that's usually in Waving Through a Window and put it after the song, which meant there was quite a wait between the end of Waving Through a Window and the next song, which is Fall Forever.
Hey, I know. You can go around today and ask the other kids to sign your cast. How about that?
Perfect.
I'm proud of you already.
Oh, good.
I do, however, think it was a mistake to take out the song Good For You because A, another bop, but B, that's the song where other characters hold Evan accountable and everything begins to come crashing down around him. They still got kind of the same effect through dialogue, but I think it's safe to say that a lot of people, myself included, feel like Evan gets off relatively easily with what he's done, and I just think it was an error in judgment to take away the one song that kind of points that out.
So you found a place where the grass is greener, and you jump the fence to the other side. Is it good? Are they giving you a world I could never provide?
There are then two original songs that have been added into the film. The first is The Anonymous Ones, which is performed by the character of Alana, who doesn't ever get her own song in the stage show. It's nice enough as a number, and it does a good job of rounding out her as a character in a way that we haven't seen before. It's all about how everyone has something to hide, and for a lot of people that's struggles with their mental health, and how we should normalise it and not feel embarrassed, which is great. I don't think it necessarily adds that much to the overall story beyond developing the character of Alana, but I do quite like the staging of it in that we go back to the beginning of the film and get a parallel of what Alana was living while Evan had been singing Waving Through a Window, which was a nice effect.
The parts we can't tell, we carry them well, but that doesn't mean they're not heavy. The parts we can't tell, we carry them well, but that doesn't mean they're not heavy. The anonymous one, noticed by none. The parts we can't tell, we carry them well, but that doesn't mean they're not.
fact, let's talk a little bit about the staging of the songs, because I really am in two minds about it. Dear Evan Hansen is not a particularly showy musical on stage. It's very stripped back and minimalist in terms of the set. There's no big dance numbers or choreography, and yet it always feels very theatrical. Like, the cast are used well to fill in the gaps on the stage and to add depth. There's always something going on in the background, even if you're meant to be looking at something else that's happening on the stage. And importantly, Connor is there for the entire show and becomes increasingly more present as Evan's lies sort of take over his life and he begins convincing even himself of them even more. You don't get any of that in the film. Instead, you tend to get one person standing in a room singing a song with a flashback. And when I say with a flashback, I mean multiple flashbacks every single song. Like, you're in the present day, the character is singing, and oh, we're into a flashback. Every song. I'm not even kidding. Like, that's fine every now and again. Some songs it works really well for. But it just feels a little bit like they've gone, aha, we've had an idea, it works for this, let's not ever do anything different. Which is a bit frustrating, because one of the benefits of movie musicals as a medium is that you should be able to play around a bit and do interesting things with the camera work and the staging. And I found it all a little bit flat in the film. Again, it does suit the style that they've gone for, but it just was a little bit bland and predictable after a while. In fact, the one song that does lean into the movie musical vibe is Sincerely Me. Now, this is the moment when Evan has recruited Jared, a family friend, and they're writing the emails that Evan will use as his fake correspondence with Connor. On stage, when you see it, you have Evan and Jared on one side of the stage with Connor alone on the other, and Connor is singing whatever the two lads type, and then as it becomes more convincing, Evan sort of moves across the stage to join Connor, and eventually Jared joins them as well. It's really, really effective on stage because it's also the moment that, if you're looking out for it, you begin to see Evan being taken over by the lies that he's telling. And so I was really, really interested to see how they would do this in the film. And I'm not going to lie, I do think it's by far the most interesting number in it. You still have Evan and Jared at a computer in the present day, but then you have Connor, played by real-life Evan understudy on Broadway Colton Ryan, basically walking through the school, singing his parts directly to camera and dancing around and then resetting and repeating certain actions as Evan and Jared delete bits and rewrite them.
Dear Evan Hansen, we've been way too out of touch. Things have been crazy, and it sucks that we don't talk that much. But I should tell you that I think of you each night. I rub my nipples and start moaning with delight.
Why would you write that?
I'm just trying to make it erotic.
Look, if you can't take this seriously...
Ugh, calm yourself, honey.
I just want to get this over with.
It's the moment that the film remembers how movie musicals work and that it is one. But it also feels so incredibly out of place. I really, really like it as a concept, I do. But if you're then going to go for this gritty realism for the rest of the film, interspersed with countless flashbacks, then putting in a movie musical song like this feels weird. Don't get me wrong, I'm pleased that they did it. I am a musicals fan first and foremost. But it felt like such a tone change in a way that it never has done in the stage show. I also know that a lot of film people really hate this number, so I wonder whether there could have been a better way of smoothing out its introduction and making it feel a little bit more in keeping with the rest of the film, or rather, bringing the rest of the film to the level of Sincerely Me.
If you give it your attention, all you gotta do is just believe you can be who you wanna be. Sincerely.
So where to go with this? There is a lot wrong with this film. I think Ben Platt was miscast as Evan, and I think that has turned people against the film before they even go in to see it. I think it doesn't quite toe the line between trying to be a realistic movie and a movie musical. I wish it had been more interesting in terms of how it executed the musical parts of it. A lot of the time it's just people walking through a high school, which makes it all feel like the really boring parts of Glee, and there are some really annoying edits, especially in the opening song, which, like, come on, don't annoy people that early on, lads. I think we aren't encouraged to judge or critique Evan enough. I think we are expected to rely on existing knowledge of the story and the plot to understand that what Evan is doing is wrong and that he will get some level of comeuppance, because it's really not displayed in that much depth in the film itself, perhaps so as not to encourage us to turn against Ben Platt as Evan even more. I haven't addressed the fact that the whole romance between Evan and Zoe comes across as really creepy and stalkerish, partly because Ben Platt looks like an old goblin, as we've covered, who's watching a nice young girl go about her day, but also because of the overdependence on flashbacks, which suggests that he's been watching her and obsessing over her for years, which, no thanks lads, big red flag. I also understand why critics are calling it overly emotional, because it does sort of go from, ah, this is very one level, to, oh my god, I'm sobbing my eyes out, pass me a tissue please. And yet, with all of that being said, I enjoyed it far more than I was expecting to. Maybe it's because I didn't have high hopes, or maybe it's because I like musicals and so was willing to be a bit more lenient, or maybe it's just because I've seen the stage show and so I knew what they were trying to do at every point. Like, don't get me wrong, this isn't a good film. There is a lot wrong with it and I have many, many notes. But I also feel like, weirdly, they've done a decent job of adapting the stage show for the screen. Do I wish they'd done a professional shot of the stage show and released that instead? Yes, of course. But as a movie version of a musical, this is basically fine. It tells the story, you get to see the award-winning creator of the title role performing in the role that made him famous. It makes Dear Evan Hansen a bit more accessible to a much wider audience. Do I wish it was better done? Sure. Do I think it was necessary? Not really. Am I mad that it happened? No. If you are someone who likes the music and wants to see Dear Evan Hansen, then I would absolutely recommend this film. Don't go in expecting something visually amazing, but you will get the story and the music and the emotion of the stage show. It's not as good as the stage show by any means, but I think it'll do. In fact, more than the criticisms that we've seen regarding the casting choices and so on, I think ultimately my biggest issue with this film is that it once again plays into this idea that we need movie versions of musicals. Now, don't get me wrong, I think it's brilliant that we're getting more and more ways of bringing stage shows to a wider audience and making it cheaper and more accessible to experience these stories and the music outside of the theatre. But please let us not forget that stage musicals are very different to films. It can be so difficult to toe the line of a movie musical in deciding which bits lean more towards film and which bits lean more towards musicals. I think everybody's talking about Jamie managed it because you watch that film and you can really tell that they're committing to the theatrical side of things, and it works for it. I don't think that would have worked for Dear Evan Hansen. The story isn't showy or flamboyant or any of the other stereotypes associated with musical theatre. It's quiet and stripped back and emotional, and that's what makes it effective on stage. And I understand why, when you transferred that to the screen, it would happen in a way that felt realistic. But that detracts from the musical side of things, and you end up in the situation that we're now in, where most of the musical numbers feel very samey and bland as a person sings and then cuts to a flashback, and the most genuinely movie musical number in Sincerely Me feels horribly out of place. Now, I can't say that I know how to do it better. I think they did do the best job they could with the material, and as I said, it's a decent adaptation overall. But does the element of realism that they've so clearly tried to capture here, does that really go with a movie musical, or are the two fundamentally too different? If we have a successful stage show that we want to make accessible, that we want people to see, are we better just filming that and letting it be what it is? We've seen it with Hamilton, we've seen it with Come From Away. Neither of those would be as good if they were turned into traditional movie musicals. Are we at a point then where we, as musical theatre fans, should be fighting to keep stage shows on stage, even when they're being filmed and made accessible, which is great, as I've said. I am all for that. Much more of that, please. But these stage shows work because they are on stage, because they have been designed to be on stage. We know that Dear Evan Hansen is an incredibly successful musical, and yet it is not a successful film because it doesn't ever quite land on what it's trying to do or be. Should we be encouraging movie musicals to focus on original stories, on original music, commit to making something that works as a movie musical in and of itself, not as a film adaptation of a stage show where you have to worry about translating music and the staging and, crucially, acknowledging the lack of an interval, despite having something that's still very long and knowing that your audience aren't going to get a break to go for a wee. My God, please make sure you empty your bladder before you sit down for any of these films. The point is Dear Evan Hansen the turning point in deciding what should be a movie musical and what would be better being left alone and filmed as a stage show? It's an interesting question and not one that I have the answer for. I will say we've still got plenty more movie musicals to come this year. Next month, there'll be Lin-Manuel Miranda's movie adaptation of Tick, Tick, Boom, which comes to Netflix just a few days after the anniversary production of Miss Saigon, which was filmed on stage as a comparison. In December, we've then got Steven Spielberg's much-anticipated remake of West Side Story. And then there's things like Wicked and Matilda and so on set to come out in the next year or so. It's not a clear-cut thing, but I think Dear Evan Hansen is probably going to turn into a good example of why some movie musicals work better than others. A lot of people will, and do, really hate this film. Others will enjoy it, others will find it fine. I think it was better than I was expecting it to be, and I would genuinely recommend it. But then I've also been listening to Diana the Musical completely unironically, so maybe my judgment is skewed. Either way, if you want to experience Dear Evan Hansen but can't afford the time or energy or money to go to London, you could do much worse than this film, so maybe consider giving it a go. And on that note, I will say goodbye for this week. Of course, I'll be back again next Sunday evening twice, first at 6 p.m. live on URN at 1350.net with Showtime for a whole hour of glorious musical theatre tunes, and then right here again at 7 p.m. straight after that with a brand new episode of Spotlight On to let you know exactly what's going on in the world of musical theatre. Because, as we say, the showtime must go on. Until then, good night.
You're listening to Showtime
on URN.